Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Madhav Jaya Radha Madhav Jaya Radha Madhav Jaya Radha Madhav Jaya Nrsingadev Jaya Nrsingadev Jaya Nrsingadev Jaya Jaya Panchatatma Jaya Panchatatma Jaya Panchatatma Jaya Panchatatma Nita Gara Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nita Gara Hari Bol. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Shri Astotara Sarasri Srimati's Divine Grace Isi Bhaktivaranta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Shri Radha Madhavasta Sakhi Vrinda Ki Shri Nrsimhadev Bhagavan Ki Shri Panchatattva Ki Nitai Gaur Premanande All glorious the assembled devotees All glorious the assembled devotees All glorious the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishai Bhutale. Shmita Bhakti Chara Swamini Tamine Sinita Jaita Supranata Bhagmi Nam Chara Sputam. Prabhupada Gata Paranami Bhakti Chara. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtai Bhutale Shmita Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine. Namaste Sasta Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschetta Deshatarine. Mukam karati vachalam pankam langayate giring yakripata maham vande shigurdina taranam. Om jnanata mirandasya jnanam janashalakaya chakchurun mitamina tasmai shri guruve namaha. Jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadha shrivas adi gaura bhakta vrinda. Hare krishna 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 hare hare. Hare rama 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 hare hare. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udhirayet. Nasta prayeshava bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shlokir bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Srinivatam svakataha krishna punyashavana kirtana hridayantaste badrani vidhunoti suhritatam. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, verses 34 to 39. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So the verse we're specifically reading from, or reciting together, is from text 37. So please repeat. Tam taktu kamam mamatam bharatus tyaja vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Tang tyaktu kamam mamatam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Tam tyaktu kamam mamatam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Jang tak tu kama mama tam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Jang tak tu kama mama tam Shankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Tam tyaktu kamam mamatam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu. Tam tyaktu kamam mamatam. Bharatus tyaga vishankitam. Nama nirvachanam tasya. Shlokam enam surajagu. Nama nirvachanam tasya Slokam enam surajagu Matajis Tam tyaktu kamam mamatam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Tam tyaktu kamam mamatam Bharatus tyaga vishankitam Nama nirvachanam tasya Shlokam enam surajagu Okay, please repeat. Tam, that newly born baby. T, Tyaktu kamam. Who was trying to avoid mamatam unto mamata. Bharatu tyaga vishankitam. Very much afraid of being forsaken by her husband because of giving birth to an illegitimate son. Namanirvachanam, a name-giving ceremony, or namakarna, tasya, to the child, shlokam, verse, enam, this, suraha, the demigods, jagu, enunciated. Okay, please repeat. Mamata very much feared being forsaken by her husband for giving birth to an illegitimate son. And therefore she considered giving up the child. But then the demigods solved the problem by enunciating a name for the child. Thank you. Please listen. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Mamata very much feared being forsaken by her husband for giving birth to an illegitimate son, and therefore she considered giving up the child. But then the demigods solved the problem by enunciating a name for the child. Purport. According to Vedic scripture, whenever a child is born, there are some ceremonies known as Jata Karma and Namakarana, in which learned brahmanas, immediately after the birth of the child, make a horoscope according to astrological calculations. But the child to which Mamata gave birth was begotten by Brihaspati irreligiously, for although Mamata was the wife of Utatya, Brihaspati made her pregnant by force. Therefore, Brihaspati became Bharata. According to Vedic culture, a wife is considered the property of her husband, and a son born by illicit sex is called Dvaja. The common word still current in Hindu society for such a son is Dogla, which refers to a son not begotten by the husband of his mother. In such a situation, it is difficult to give the child a name according to proper regulative principles. Mamata, therefore, was perplexed. But the demigods gave the child the appropriate name Bharadvaj, which indicated that the child born illegitimately should be maintained by both Mamata and Brihaspati. So I just want to read the verses 34 to 39, so we're caught up on what's going on here. So text 34 says, O King Parikshit, Maharaj Bharat had three pleasing wives, whom were daughters of the king of Vidarbha. When all three of them bore children who did not resemble the king, these wives thought that he would consider them unfaithful queens and rejected them, and therefore they killed their own sons. The king, his attempt for progeny frustrated in this way, performed a sacrifice named Marut Stoma to get a son. The demigods, known as the Maruts, being fully satisfied with him, then presented him a son named Bharadvaj. When the demigod named Brihaspati was attracted by his brother's wife Mamata, who at the time was pregnant, he desired to have sexual relations with her. The son within her womb forbid this, but Brihaspati cursed him and forcibly discharged semen into the womb of Mamata. Purport. The sex impulse is so strong in this material world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar, wanted to have sexual relationship with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of the higher demigods, so what to speak of human society? The sex impulse is so strong that it can agitate even a learned personality like Brihaspati. Mamata very much feared being forsaken by her husband for giving birth to an illegitimate son, and therefore she considered giving up the child. But then a demigod solved the problem by enunciating a name for the child. Brihaspati said to Mamata, "You foolish woman! Although this child is born from the wife of one man through the semen discharged by another, you should maintain him." Upon hearing this, Mamata replied, "O Brihaspati, you maintain him." After speaking in this way, Brihaspati and Mamata both left. Thus, the child was known as Bharadvaj. Last verse. Although encouraged by the demigods to maintain the child, Mamata considered him useless because of his illicit birth, and therefore she left him. Consequently, the demigods, known as the Maruts, maintained the child, and when Maharaj Bharat was disappointed for want of a child, this child was given to him as his son. Purport. From this verse, it is understood that those who are rejected from the higher planetary systems are given a chance to take birth in the most exalted families on this planet Earth. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 9th canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Purum. So just to recap what we're going through so far, what we've learned so far. So Parikshit Maharaj originally had heard from Shukadev Goswami about all these different types of manus. So then Parikshit Maharaj specifically asked about Vaivasvata Manu and all the dynasties and all the kings in that particular line. So now we're looking at, this chapter is about the Puru dynasty, which is the line that Parikshit Maharaj is from. And in this chapter so far, we've seen many listings of different kinds of kings and a little, sometimes a brief description of what they did. And then yesterday we talked about how Bharat Maharaj was born from Shakuntala and Dushmanta. And then we went into the qualities and activities of Bharat Maharaj. We found out that he's a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's known for performing grand ritualistic ceremonies. They said that he was especially doing it in India along the banks of the Ganges. You could line up the cows. It was so many cows that he was offering, horses that he was sacrificing. And he was extremely wealthy, extremely charitable. He's known for defeating those personalities who are opposed to Vedic principles. He returned the wives of the demigods back to the demigods. He ruled the earth and the heavenly planets for 27,000 years. And now we're at a point where he's decided he's had enough. He's ready to retire. So, and today we see that the wives in this particular group of verses, we see the wives have killed their sons. It says here, the word given is na anurupa. So it could mean that they didn't look like him. Other places translate it as they didn't have the same qualities as him. Right? Someone as great as Bharat Maharaj, who is emperor of the heavenly and earthly planets, nobody could equal him, not even his own children. And out of frustration, it killed the children. So now he has no one to succeed the throne. Nobody. Therefore, he did a sacrifice, and he was given Bharadvaj. And then it goes into how Bharadvaj was born. Yesterday, Ananga Mohan Prabhu was talking about how we see all these lists and lists of names, especially in this canto, just name after name after name. And he said that these names indicate that these personalities were not ordinary personalities. They'd all done something extraordinary. They'd all done something wonderful. And I was thinking just kind of along those lines in the Mahabharata. There's something beautiful here that says, "Whatever is found in this epic may be found elsewhere, but what is not found here will be impossible to find anywhere." So whatever you find in Shastra, it can happen anywhere. But if it's not in Shastra, you're never going to find it, is essentially what it says. So I was just kind of thinking that, yes, they are extraordinary personalities. They're, you know, amazing, incomprehensible activities that they've done. But when you look at kind of the things that they're going through, the emotions that they're going through, it's not very different from what we experience today. We're no Bharat Maharaj, I'm not saying that, but we, the things that he went through. So for example, Bharat Maharaj has everything. He's the emperor of the world, his citizens are happy, he's, you know, he's the greatest, you know, the, we're, everything is named after him, you know, he's the best, right? But he has no progeny. He has no one to take the throne. Right? There's always something that we're hankering for. There's always a little something that we're missing. I have everything, but I need. I have everything, but if I just, right? That's kind of our nature. That's kind of how we are. I have everything, but I just need this. We always want something that somebody else has. I used to give this example when I used to teach at Smith's. So for example, the primary children are playing in the playground. And they're thinking, and they're looking up at middle school and they're thinking, man, middle school is so nice. You know, those kids are grown up and we're just a bunch of kids, you know? And everything is regulated, you know? We have to stand in lines and the teacher's always there. We never get a break. And at least in middle school, you know, we're a little bit grown up and they give us a little bit more room, right? And then you get to middle school and you look at the high school kids. And the high school kids, they look at the high school kids and they're like, man, high school kids, they're so much more mature. They can come and go as they please. They only have to study a couple subjects. You know, they can do whatever they want. They can leave. They can come in anytime. Their life is so easy. Meanwhile, the high school kids are killing themselves over IGC exams and AS exams and A-level exams. And while they're studying, they take a break and they look out and they see the primary school children playing in the playground and they think, boy, wouldn't it be nice to just play like those primary school children? So it's just this endless cycle of hankering and wanting what we don't have and looking at somebody else and wishing we had that. And, you know, so Bharat Maharaj here, he wants to retire. He can't because there's no one to take a throne. Here we have a horrible story of Mamata and Brihaspati. I was reading it and I was thinking of those like reality TV shows, you know, where things seem so unreal. It's so, I mean, here you have Mamata, who's married to Rishi Utatya, who is Brihaspati's older brother. And she's pregnant. It says in the Mahabharata that Utatya loved Mamata. He loved her. He absolutely adored her. Brihaspati sees her and he's attracted to her. He has to have her. Mamata rejects him. She says, no, I'm already pregnant with your brother's son, your elder brother's son. Even the fetus says, look, there's no room in here. I've taken up all the space. You can't have her. There's no space for your seed. And then Brihaspati, out of frustration, curses the fetus. And he curses the fetus to be in perpetual darkness. And therefore, that fetus was born blind. It doesn't say it in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but I looked it up and it says, it elaborates it more in the Mahabharata. And if you have time, read the Mahabharata, it's in Adi Parva. The personality's name is Durga Tamas, and it's interesting how his life kind of went on after that. But either way, so Brihaspati curses the fetus and rapes her. Right, the line here is, Brihaspati cursed him and forcibly discharged semen into the womb of Mamata. That's rape, essentially. Horrible. It's a horrible thing. And then what even blew my mind after that, he just kind of continues on being the guru of the demigods. Like he didn't just commit this abominable action of raping a pregnant woman. And then Mamata is just left there with this child that she didn't ask for, that she didn't want. And I you know, my heart just felt for her. What a horrible situation. She gives birth to the child. And the demigods then suggest that Mamata and Brihaspati should raise them. Brihaspati then calls her. She says, "You foolish woman. She's a foolish woman. You foolish woman, you maintain it." She says, "You maintain it." And then they both just leave, and Bhardwaj is just right there. This innocent baby, who didn't ask to be born, is just there. Amazing. Amazing. It sounds like, honestly, it sounds like a story from these days, from nowadays times. I was shocked when I read this. So then the Maruts pick up Bhardwaj, and they gave him this name. Bhardwaj Dvajam means born by illicit connection, and it also means one with two fathers. And then Bhara, I thought this was interesting, Bhara means to maintain, but it can also be defined as burden. So when we look at the verse where Mamata and Brihaspati are arguing, Bhara Dvajam, the illegitimate child is your burden. No, the illegitimate child is your burden. And then they both walk away. Amazing. So there's many things that I that could have been discussed in these verses. So many topics to unwind and discuss, but I really actually just wanted to focus on Bhardwaj, the child that was left behind, the burden of an illegitimate son. And I wanted to say that your creation is not your conclusion. Your creation is not your conclusion. And today we're going to look at examples of personalities who managed to somehow or the other turn their life around. We'll just see what this has to do with us. And also, how do we turn our own lives around if we're in a position where we need to turn our lives around? So let's look at some examples of people who started off kind of unfortunate and actually became very fortunate in the end. So the first example is who we're talking about here, Bhardwaj, right? Who was conceived through, you know, in an illegitimate way, wasn't even given a samskara, wasn't given a name, wasn't given anything. He was rejected, neglected. In the Vishnu Purana, it says that when he was conceived, his stepbrother kicked him out of the womb. So, you know, the second he was conceived, he kicked him out. "Nope, there's no room. I'm studying in here. Get out of here." He was kicked out of the womb and then rejected by both parents. So Bhardwaj is completely neglected, completely rejected. Very unfortunate birth. But then the Maruts decide to take care of him. And then what happens? He becomes the heir to Maharaj's empire. He becomes the king of the heavenly planets, of the earth. He becomes one of the Saptarishis. I believe it's the same Bhardwaj. He becomes one of the Saptarishis. He's mentioned in the Ramayana. He's mentioned in the Mahabharata. He becomes very exalted. So just because somebody has a very unfortunate birth doesn't mean that they're meant to lead an unfortunate life. Another example is Haridas Thakur, his birth was not particularly unfortunate. He was just born in a different religion. There's a beautiful poem by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll share a few verses with you. "O born of Muslim parents, Haridas, and trained in youth in Muslim creed, thy noble heart to Vaishnava truth did pass, thy holy acts thy candor plead. Is there a soul that cannot learn from thee that man must give up sect for God, that thoughts of race and sect can ne'er agree with what they call religion broad? Thy love of God and brother's soul alone, bereft thyself of early friends, thy softer feelings oft to kindness prone, let on thyself for higher ends. There's just a few, there's like 8 verses, but we won't get into all those verses. So we see here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying he's born and raised as a Muslim. And then he accepts, he completely, it says he's transcending what, you know, religious birth he is, and he accepts chanting Hare Krishna. He accepts Vaishnavism. And from doing this, he endures so many hardships. He was even tortured for rejecting the Muslim faith. But what was the result? This seems very unfortunate when you see that he's dragged in 22 marketplaces, when you see people are trying to tempt him, to persuade him, to bring him down, and he's still very steadfastly chanting, and it just seems like, what's the point? Right? What's the point? He gets the personal association of Lord Chaitanya just by chanting. This is something I always found amazing, because Haridas Thakur isn't a rich person. He doesn't have like a house or a wife or kids or money. He doesn't have anything except chanting. He just chants. And he goes from one place to the other and he chants. But when we accept that the holy name is non-different from Krishna, this is a practical example where he gets the personal association of Lord Chaitanya himself. He didn't have to seek out Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya came to him. When he was in Jagannath Puri, he sat under the buckle tree every morning and would chant. And Lord Chaitanya personally, after Mangal Arati, would come to him. How fortunate is that? How many of us can get Krishna to come to us? And just by his sincerity, by the purity of his chanting, Krishna came to him. Even in his last moments, Lord Chaitanya was there, picked up his body, and placed him in the samadhi. What a life. It's amazing. So just because you're born a certain way, doesn't mean that you end up that way. Your creation is not your conclusion. From the same Shastra, we can look at Jagai and Madai, which is a little bit different, because they were born in a Brahmana family. But then by bad association, they became very, very fallen. There wasn't a sin they hadn't committed except Vaishnava Aparadha. But even they were able to be changed. They were personally embraced by the Lord. And their lives changed from that day. People were amazed. So maybe you have a great birth, but you fall down along the way. That doesn't mean that you can't be redeemed. And then also there's so many examples in Shastra about people who start off unfortunate and they get that mercy, they get Krishna, they get the liberation, they get so many. Prahlad Maharaj is another one, born in a demoniac family. Father is constantly trying to kill him. Eventually Nrsimhadev, Krishna himself personally comes as Nrsimhadev, kills his father, saves Prahlad. Valmiki starts his life off as Ratnakar. Says he was born in a Brahmana family, got lost, was raised by hunters. Then he became so fallen. Narada Muni found him and saved him. He said, chant the name of Rama. I can't chant the name of Rama. Ratnakar was so horrible, he would half kill animals just to watch them suffer as they died. So evil. So then Narada Muni said, okay, if you can't chant Rama, chant Mara. Mara, if you keep chanting it, it turns into Rama. Mara means death, you know, because he was so evil. He couldn't even chant Ram's name. When Narada Muni found him, he was completely purified. He's Valmiki. He became Valmiki, the writer of the Ramayana. So we've discussed all these different personalities who start off in an unfortunate position, somehow fell into an unfortunate position, but they were able to be redeemed. They were able to be saved. So now, I guess, you know, most of us are sitting here and we're all devotees, so maybe why does it matter to us? Why should we care about this? You know, we already hit the top, we hit the heights. Maybe for most of you, yeah, I think most of you kind of have your life settled, but then there are others, I think, that are still trying to find their purpose. And I think we deserve a life of purpose, and that's why I wanted to talk about this. And when I talk about a life of purpose, obviously it means that you do what you were born to do, right? You act according to your qualities, and you dedicate it to Krishna. That's our purpose. That's our dharma. There's a nice quotation by Mark Twain. Two of the most important days in your life is the day you're born and the day you find out why. And I think it's so important for each and every one of us to find our purpose. That we're not just aimlessly doing a service because there's nothing else to do, because we happen to be here. And then we give that to Krishna. There's a place for all of our talents in Krishna consciousness. It's not, you know, like, you know, you're either a book distributor or a pujari, or, you know, you just hang around chanting. There's so many things that you can do, so many ways you can use your intelligence. And we take those qualities and we offer it to Krishna. We offer it to the devotees. But sometimes, on our way to finding our purpose, we fall short. Sometimes, due to our birth, we feel like we're behind. There's a line in the book, Ocean of Mercy, by Bhakti Charaswami. And he's having a conversation with Tamal Krishna Maharaj on the banks of the Ganges in Rishikesh. So, Bhakti Chara Maharaj is saying, he's narrating what he experienced. He said, the other day a devotee came to see Srila Prabhupada. He was lamenting how degraded he was. But Srila Prabhupada told him that this was superficial, since as soon as Srila Prabhupada had called him, the devotee had come and joined him. And if you haven't read that book, by the way, you absolutely should. You'll cry from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. It's so good, super good. And I'm not just saying that because he's my guru. I'm very critical usually, but it was very good. It was very well written and very much in his own voice. So, Ocean of Mercy. So I just thought that was such a nice line that Srila Prabhupada said. Doesn't matter what birth you have, because when I called you, you came running. I thought that was so beautiful. So don't feel like just because you're born in a certain family, you've fallen behind. There's no way you can catch up. The point is that you start. Sometimes we make a mistake and we fall down. This happens. We're all struggling. We just turned our heads to Krishna. We say, forget it, I can't do this. We do anything and everything aside from Krishna consciousness. But we shouldn't give up. A baby learning to walk doesn't fall on the floor and say, I guess I belong on the floor. Right? The baby gets up and tries again. The mother picks him up and says, nope, try again. Do it again. Falls down. Okay, do it again. Okay, now you walked a little two steps further. Get up, do it again. Now you're going to walk from the distance of me to your father. Now you're going to walk from the distance of me to the end of the house. Now you're going to, you know, And every time it gets a little further and a little more. But if you get up, you're still sitting in that same place that you fell. So even if in your endeavor you fall down, you get up and you just keep going. And you'll end up a little further. Maybe you're like Bharadwaj, and it seems like nobody wants you. Stepbrother kicks you out. Mother and father reject you. But I can see here that Bharadwaj had purpose. Krishna wanted him. Krishna gave him purpose. Now, I'm not condoning the actions of what Brihaspati did to Mamata before I say this. But sometimes two people have to come together for a certain amount of time, for a certain reason, just for you to be born with all your qualities and all your characteristics. There was no other way. Bharat Maharaj had a kingdom so perfect nobody could replace him. And the only person that was fit to rule was Bharadwaj. There could be no attachments between his birth parents. Because if they were attached, they would have kept him and he would have led a different life. So the attachment is severed through the action of Brihaspati and through the behavior of both parents. And the child was left neglected and then given to Bharat Maharaj. So if that hadn't happened, Bharat Maharaj wouldn't have had an heir. But because of it, now we have an heir, and Bharadwaj became glorious. So we talked about some examples. We talked about how it applies to us, right? That it's never too late for us to pick ourselves up wherever we are in our devotional practice and to keep going. How do we pick ourselves up now? The first thing is it takes some realization. For example, my husband and I are reading Nityananda Charitamrita now, so we just finished this part where Madhai gives these beautiful prayers to Lord Nityananda. If you have time to read Nityananda Charitamrita, you should definitely do it. Very good. And he gives these beautiful prayers to Lord Nityananda where he's describing the qualities of Nityananda, and then he said, but I cut your body. He couldn't believe the activity he'd done. He said, you're so merciful, but I cut you. You're non-different from Lakshman, and I cut you. You're non-different from Balaram, but I cut you. He just couldn't believe himself. Some realization has to be there. Look at the condition I'm in. This is not where I'm meant to be. This is not my purpose. After that, I think it takes some determination. We see with Haridas Thakur, with Prahlad Maharaj, they were determined. When you know what you have to do, when you know what your purpose is, when you know what your service is, you do it. You find a way. Even if it's the smallest way, you do it. They were very determined. Nothing could deter them from fulfilling their purpose. And I think above all, it requires some faith. That somehow Krishna will see you through. I oftentimes think of the life of Srila Prabhupada. Because in the very beginning, in the very, very beginning, I mean, for me, I would feel completely hopeless. He started an organization in India. It fell through. He's there distributing magazines. You know, people aren't really receptive. His business failed. He gives his wife an ultimatum. By the way, I always say, never give an ultimatum. You always lose. You always lose in an ultimatum. Never give an ultimatum. He gives the ultimatum, tea or me. She says, I pick tea. How heartbreaking for your wife to not even support your devotional endeavors. For me, I would have given up. I would have been like, forget this. this isn't working, Krishna doesn't want me to do this. It takes some determination. It takes some faith to continue doing what you're doing at whatever scale. And just see what Srila Prabhupada created. He created a society for all of us. He created a home for all of us. It's amazing because I can go anywhere in the world and find devotees. I know Mangalarti is at 4:30. I know when Prasadam is. I know I at least have a place to crash somewhere. There's usually a devotee I know. It's amazing. We're like a giant family. Only Srila Prabhupada could do that with his determination and faith in Krishna. So we must have faith when we're pursuing. Krishna wouldn't give you certain qualities if he didn't want you to perform them. You have a purpose. Your creation is not, it's not your destination. Your creation is not, it's not your conclusion. Wherever you are now, you can pick yourself up and keep going. So today we've talked about, we summarized what's happened in this chapter. We talked about examples of personalities who managed to overcome their birth. They managed to overcome wherever they fell down, and they managed to turn their lives around and keep going. We analyzed if this had any relevance to us at all. We said that yes, because we have a purpose-driven life. That's why we're given this birth. And then we talked about how we have to do it with faith, with determination, and with realization. So I wanted to conclude today's class with a quotation by Srila Prabhupada. And I read this every day, and especially when I'm feeling very depressed and not myself. You know, recently I've been going through a lot of things, and this is very helpful. Whenever I read anything by Srila Prabhupada, it's very helpful. He's so encouraging. So this is a letter he wrote to Gurudas Prabhu on August 29th, 1972. And he says, listen, this is nice. Do not be depressed. All along, my God brothers gave me only depression, repression, and compression. But I continued strong in my duty. So never mind if there's some discouragement. Continue with your work in full, enthusiastic, Krishna-conscious attitude of service. Isn't that beautiful? Even he was getting obstacles from his own God brothers, and he said, just continue with enthusiasm and Krishna consciousness. So never mind if there's discouragement. So whatever you're doing, just keep going. Okay, with that in mind, thank you very much for listening to my class today, my brief discussion. And thank you all for coming so early. does anyone have any questions or any thoughts or anything? Yeah. Does anyone want to hand her the microphone, maybe? Hang on, it's Mataji. How to get faith and determination. I think when we find a purpose, like I said, there must be a purpose-driven life. So when you find out why Krishna has made you the way you are, you can do it with determination because you know that, I'll give an example of my husband. I'm not going to talk about myself. My husband likes to sing. He's born a singer. This man sings in his sleep. Literally, not exaggerating. Right? He was born for this. He can't do anything else. If I put him on this Vyasa sign, he'll just sing for an hour. That's his purpose. So then he does activities according to that purpose, and he does it with determination because he knows that's what he's meant to do. So you become determined when you find your purpose, and then you find a way to give it to Krishna. Faith has to come from within. I think it comes a lot from, you get it from association. I think that's really important. We see that all these personalities had association, Jagai Madai, Prahlad Maharaj. Association is the most important thing to keep us going in our faith, to keep us going in our sadhana. It's very difficult, even just reading Shastra will help you to faith, because you'll, like I said, you'll read it and you'll go, well, I felt that way. I've had that thought. And look, the answer is right here. I remember the first time I felt that way was with the Mahabharata. I read the Mahabharata, and the things that Kunti was saying or Draupadi was saying, I was like, yeah, I've said that too. And look, the answer's right here. So I think faith comes with association. It comes with persistence, and determination comes with finding your purpose and acting in that direction and giving it to Krishna. There was another, I wanted to include it, but I can't include everything. But there was something where Srila Prabhupada was saying, he said, even if you fail, it's okay. It's okay if you fail. Nothing happens without Krishna's sanction. So even the failure is Krishna. So you just be determined and you keep going. Does that answer your question? Okay, thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
The other day, Maharaj said that never in history has a wife ever been satisfied with her husband. And I thought, if Amataji gives class, I'd ask her about that, because, you know, he's talking from a sannyasi point of view, and is it really that bad that she'll never quit complaining no matter what the husband does and how hard he tries?
So no matter what a husband does, a woman is never satisfied. Like I said earlier, I think like the nature of humanity is to never be satisfied. Even men are not satisfied. What to speak of women, you know? I mean, it could go the same way. I could sound as Vyasa son and say, no matter what a wife does, a husband is never satisfied, right? I'm not sure where he got that from. For me personally, I always find it important, whatever you say, you should be able to back it up with a verse, a quotation, a pastime, something. I'm not sure where he gets that from. I didn't see anywhere in this pastime with Mamata and her husband, it doesn't say that she's dissatisfied with her husband. I mean, she's pregnant, so something must have gone right. And then at the same time, it said that he loved her. He absolutely adored her. It says so in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva. I just think that human conditioning is like, I mean, even as devotees, we're not satisfied. I could do a little bit more. Even pure devotees, I could give Krishna a little more. I could chant a little more. I could do a little more kirtan. I could make a little more devotees. I could distribute a little more books. I think nobody's satisfied. In the material world, you're not supposed to be satisfied, because we don't belong here. So I personally don't think that's true. I'm not to discount Maharaj or his understanding or experiences, but I personally, and based on my understanding, I don't agree with that, because nobody's satisfied. You think my husband is satisfied with me? I'm a mess. So I don't know. Interesting. That's an interesting thought. I've never heard that. A wife is never satisfied. We're all hanging in there. None of us are perfect. And I think when we all come to that realization, we can accept each other more, and we can find our similarities more. I'll say that I'm not saying that my marriage is perfect. We're 13 years married now. You know, and in that time, I've learned, well, he's not perfect, but I'm not perfect, and he's tolerating me, I should tolerate him too. And we both very nicely live tolerating each other. So, does that answer your question? Thank you, Prabhu. That's an interesting thought.
Mataji, small question, ma.
Sure.
Give you much trouble. Actually, faith and determination both are required for any other things for achievement, is it, Mataji?
Mm-hmm.
Faith and determination both are required for achievement of anything and to reach the topmost goal.
Mm-hmm.
This is most of the, say for example, Haddha Thakur is there.
Yeah.
So is, you forget that religion is nothing but to appoint himself the Lord. So he is very much elevated to the topmost. Some of the topmost people like Vishwamitra and those levels, they reach the topmost and fallen down.
Mm-hmm.
Is it their own will or is it the Lord's create, Lord's destiny,
mm-hmm.
Lord's will? See, people are elevated to the topmost level. Some of the munis like Vishwamitra and all.
Yeah.
But at one stage, you know, they came down,
right.
They fallen down.
Of course.
Is it their own attitude or it is the will of the Lord?
It's mostly the will of the Lord. That the Lord puts them in that situation and then they act out according to that situation. You know, like we said before, nothing happens without the desire of the Lord, without the determination of the Lord. So yeah, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna knows who Krishna is, but just for the sake of giving the Bhagavad Gita, he brings himself down. The Lord puts him in this position of perplexity. He becomes completely confused just so that Krishna could reveal the Bhagavad Gita once again. So when we see great personalities fall down, like I can't judge what Brihaspati did. I'm not a great personality. I can't judge what he did. On modern, mundane terms, that person would have been like kicked out of the ashram, you know? But here he's functioning on a completely different level. As an exalted personality. So for me, like I said previously, it looks like everything is functioning on the will of the Lord. Any other questions? I know we're rushing for Chandanyatra. Okay, Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you very much.